Hey everyone, before we get started with the podcast, I just want to take a moment to let you know about an event that we have coming up at the Camp House on August 17th. It's called Boulevard for Brown, and it is a community fundraiser event for Tommy F. Brown Academy, just up the road from the Camp House on MLK. We'll have live music from Jazzanuga, snacks from some of your favorite Big Nine District restaurants like Mindy B's Deli and The Bitter Alibi, and a ton of silent auction items from different Chattanooga businesses. Tickets are $10, and you can get those on our website at thecamphouse.com. Again, Boulevard for Brown is coming up on Thursday, August 17th, and I hope you will come out to support one of our favorite downtown elementary schools.
I think when folks think of art, they think murals. And yes, we have murals on Glass Street, but this is so much more than a mural. This is taking arts as a process, as a way, as an engagement tool, so that we can listen to the community and find the needs in the community and then create solutions that may be creative. But if they're creative, it's bringing people out of their house, which is putting feet on the street, which is connecting neighbors, which is reducing crime. So it's just a creative way to kind of come at community development. We don't have all the answers. We know that arts and culture is just one piece of the puzzle. We need housing. We need business development. We need faith-based partners. We need everything. But this is just creative placemaking is understanding the intentional value of how the arts can play a role in community development.
Teal Thabat is the executive director of Glasshouse Collective, an organization that we've had on the podcast on more than one occasion, but without ever diving into their story. So today, Teal shares how Glasshouse Collective began and some of the lessons about community development that they have learned along the way, including the importance of listening, trust, commitment, and relationships. This is the Camp House Podcast, and I am your host, Matt Busby. All right, Teal, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's so I think we've actually talked about Glasshouse quite a bit on the podcast for a lot of your different events, but we've never had an episode that's really just about you guys and your story and more of a broad introduction to what Glasshouse is to our listeners. So I'm really excited to have this conversation. You know, before we really get into talking about Glasshouse Collective, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. And are you from Chattanooga?
I am. I consider it home. I was actually born in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I live north of Seattle in a ski town called Stevens Pass. Before my dad got a job managing the Crackle Barrel off Shallowford Road and moved our family across the country. So that was about kindergarten. So this is home.
Well, so you come back after college. What was your degree and what was your experience?
My degree was in communications with an emphasis in advertising. And I was set and ready to go work at an ad agency. And not come back to Chattanooga.
But you end up coming back.
I do.
And then and you're one of the people who founded this Glasshouse Collective. So, you know, really, before we actually get into the background of how you guys started it, why you guys started it, just give us a brief definition of what Glasshouse Collective is.
We're a nonprofit. We were founded in 2012. We did not start as a nonprofit. We started really as a project and kind of morphed into a not-for-profit organization. We did. We're working to bring life back to Glass Street and Glass Street back to life in East Chattanooga. About 2 years ago, Glasshouse is now committed to the Glass Farm neighborhood, not just the commercial corridor. So we've expanded our footprint. And our work is artist-led and community-involved, and our collective goal, and by collective I mean alongside of the residents, the people who call this place home, is to make the neighborhood cleaner, safer, and more inviting.
Yeah, so for my listeners, you know, if you're not familiar with Glass Street, hopefully, you know, the whole goal of this episode is really by the end of this to inspire you to go there and check it out. It really is this amazing corridor, just like she described it, going through East Chattanooga. But, you know, you said Glass Farm neighborhood there, and I have a feeling a lot of my listeners are going to be familiar with the phrase East Chattanooga, but not necessarily Glass Farm. So that's one of the neighborhoods within East Chattanooga?
That's right, yeah.
What other?
It's the neighborhood that really surrounds the Glass Street corridor.
Okay.
So when we showed up, we were really focused on the corridor because it was such an asset. It was 1920s right. architectural line, you know, Main Street buildings. And it's only two lanes of traffic. So mm-hmm. it's similar to the feel of Brainerd Road, except for not the eight or right. six lanes of traffic between it. So it was quaint, and we really felt like there was a sense of place there. And so we started working on the corridor, but we realized that the residents were really interested in kind of working more towards what their needs are and their homes, right? Because that's what they own. And so now we've expanded and said, we're not just stuck on the corridor. We're talking about the entire neighborhood. So that that neighborhood runs from, technically, it's Dodson to Wilder to Campbell back down to Glass. So it's about 440 homes, Matt. It's not too big of a neighborhood, but it is one neighborhood in the East Chattanooga, quote unquote, district.
Okay. What are those other neighborhoods? Can you give, do you know?
I do. And this is always such a sensitive subject because some of the ladies that have been in the neighborhood for a long time, when we first showed up, they were making sure to let us know that East Chattanooga was really only Battery Heights, which is at the top of Glass Street. You take a left and there's a neighborhood kind of right at the ridge. It's a beautiful neighborhood. That neighborhood and Glass Farm was really the only East Chattanooga neighborhood. But from the news and what everyone else knows, East Chattanooga can start at Highland Park and go from Highland Park to Churchville to Avondale to Boyce Station. So it's so much larger. So it's just it's a touchy subject that for us, we talk about wanting to use Glass Street to add to the vibrancy of our city as a whole. And so when we talk about it, we're like, yes, Glass Street's in East Chattanooga, but the end goal is really East Chattanooga to Chattanooga, right? Is how do we get, like you said, people interested in this neighborhood and get people down to Glass Street, knowing that if this could be an example of how to kind of revitalize or spark change in East Chattanooga, then ideally we could take that model to South Chattanooga, to North Chattanooga, you know, and begin to create a better, more equitable city as a whole.
Yeah.
We're not just trying to like play our own game in this neighborhood just to play it. We're really hoping it really attaches to the larger city. But sometimes it's really hard to get the larger city involved because it does feel like if they don't drive through it, if they don't have a reason to go,
right.
why should
it's
you?
It's not going to be on the radar.
Right.
Right. Well, I know something that you guys talk a lot about within your organization is something called creative placemaking. Could you explain what that is? What is creative placemaking?
Yeah, so it's it's so easy for me to say, yeah, we're a creative placemaking organization, and then I get the eyebrows raised. And
because I think that's what I've always heard, is like right. Glass House Collective is a creative placemaking organization.
And nobody really even knows what that means. Honestly, it's taking arts and culture and putting that at the forefront of community planning. So we define projects in which art plays an intentional and integrated role in place-based community planning and development. So a lot of Glass House Collective's work is, when folks think of art, they think murals. And yes, we have murals on Glass Street, but this is so much more than a mural. This is taking arts as a process, as a way, as an engagement tool, so that we can listen to the community and find the needs in the community and then create solutions that may be creative. But if they're creative, it's bringing people out of their house, which is putting feet on the street, which is connecting neighbors, which is reducing crime. So it's just a creative way to kind of come at community development. We don't have all the answers. We know that arts and culture is just one piece of the puzzle. We need housing. We need business development. We need faith-based partners. We need everything. But this is just creative placemaking is understanding the intentional value of how the arts can play a role in community development.
Yeah, it's using arts as like a tool, something you can put out there to bring all these other stakeholders out in a way that they wouldn't necessarily rub shoulders in any other format.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think we're gonna talk a lot about that as we go along, sort of even some examples of how this has worked towards community planning and even development.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so going back, you said you guys started in 2012. You know, something I've always wondered, what was the original impetus for creating Glass House Collective? Like, how did this How did you begin this? Like, what does this journey look like?
That is a really long story that we should talk about over drink sometime. But I'm going to give you the really short part of that, and that's basically Create Here, which was an entity that was a 5-year not-for-profit based on Main Street that focused on culture, the arts, and economy. And actually, the Company Lab spawned out of that, Make Work, and now I guess you could say Glasshouse Collective did as well. But they hired or brought in Good Magazine, which is a national published magazine. And they did an exercise called City R&D. R&D is research and development. And started talking about, okay, Chattanooga is growing. We're having a hard time retaining talent. But we have Enterprise South now. I think that was right around that announcement. So that's home to Amazon and Volkswagen. And then we have Downtown, which isn't the industry that we used to have. It's different. That was like the announcement of Blue Cross. And so things are really changing 2009, 2011 in our downtown core, right? And so how do we connect our two centers of growth as a city, which is really Enterprise South and downtown Chattanooga? And we all got on bikes, we got on the bus, we got in cars, and we drove to like physically connect these two places, and each team went through Glass Street. When we got back to discuss our findings, we were all just like, what is this place? Like, how do we not come across this? This is incredible. Like, it just seemed kind of like an eerie ghost town, but like the potential was there. And so I think everyone just got really excited about that. And so we did too, which led us into coming up with a great idea, which wasn't so great, but saying that we really wanted to take all the storefronts on Glass Street. And basically, you know, this is where creative placemaking isn't the right way, right? We're saying we wanted to take arts, but we were pushing our, not the community's priorities. We were pushing our priorities, using art as a way to do that, saying, hey, we want to come in and enliven all these storefronts just because the storefronts are cool and we should draw attention to them.
Yeah.
So we go to the Neighborhood Association a few weeks after, and we let the Neighborhood Association know of our great idea, and they tell us to take our white butts home because who are we to tell the neighborhood what they needed and what they wanted? Yeah. You know, we didn't listen. We have no idea the challenges and struggles that the community had. And yes, we were excited, young and naive, energetic, you know, arts-driven people, but it was a Band-Aid on something so much bigger. So we took our white butts home, and then we came back because we're stubborn. And we just said, hey, if you guys don't mind, we'd like to attend some more of these meetings and just listen.
Yeah.
And so that first basically a year and a half was just hard, and it was listening.
Yeah, so I mean, at what point, well, so first of all, again, as you're hearing Teal, you know, describe Glass Street, it really is one of those places when you drive through, you cannot help but feel the potential of that area. Again, like you said, it's only two lanes, which is shocking that it was never made wider. But that means you have the potential for an incredibly walkable commercial district, which is, you know, something that new urbanists, people moving into cities, love that kind of stuff now.
That's right.
But so at what point did this go from essentially being, you know, a project that you guys wanted to do, because that's all it was in those early days, is just going in, hey, let's do some art in the storefront so people can see potential, a project, into, okay, actually, if we're going to do something and we feel, you know, it's got to be long-term, this isn't just a one-off project. So I mean, and you started to talk about that. Keep going with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were young and we didn't know what to expect, and we realized that it wasn't our vision to cast, and so it was kind of difficult for us to say, okay, should we start a nonprofit? Should we not? Should we do this? You know, and I think at one point, I think Catherine Curran, who's also the co-founder, she said, I think instead of us just trying to create these answers for ourselves, we need to get the community to tell us what that answer is. And so that really just meant listening, and so we went on this listening tour. And at that point, Matt, we were a component fund of the Community Foundation. So we were able to apply for grants through their 501c3 status. I'm not sure if they do that anymore, but it was incredibly helpful for us because we didn't get bogged down in paperwork. We were still able to like see the mission and like what it is that we were doing. At that time too, we also partnered with Chattanooga Neighborhood Enterprise. They had a building on Glass Street that was vacant, and so we occupied it and kind of put a flag in the ground. And I think the minute that we did that, the neighborhood was like, okay, these folks are serious. They're staying. This isn't a one and done. You know, so many people come into the East Chattanooga community thinking that they've got the answer, and then they leave. And it's this the broken expectations and managing expectations that Glasshouse was really trying to figure out. What is our role? And I think honestly between us, well, and all the listeners, I think we're still battling like, what is our continued role? Like the community evolves, we evolve. What does this look like? But we applied for an Art Place America grant, which is a national grant. And we received a $300,000 investment. I was like 22 years old. It's just so funny. I think about it now and I'm like, wow. But that's what those dollars are for. They're risky monies for experimental community development projects. And, you know, I'd argue that they are really impressed with the outcome that we've done with just a little bit of what we've been able to receive. And we have received some local monies, but there's definitely this national spotlight on this because there's communities like Glass Street in every state and in every place, and everybody's trying to learn. How do you do this work without gentrifying? How do you do this work by starting with kind of a creative aspect to really drive the people's interests versus let's just make this place look good because we have the money to do it and then the people will come later? It's like, no, we have people in this community already. How do we build on them as the assets?
Right.
And so we've been fortunate to receive some grants from outside, which has then pushed us to get our own nonprofit status because we had money in the bank.
Yeah.
But when we started our nonprofit, we said, listen, you guys, we're going to be beta-minded. And if the organization it does not exist for forever, we're here to fill a need. And that need isn't based on what we think. It's based on what the needs of the community are at the time. So, you know, we try to go through a strategic planning process as much as we can, but it's like, it's so hard because we'll come up in 2015, we came up with a 3-year work plan, but if the neighborhood isn't interested in that 3-year work plan, like why are we working on behalf of that work plan? So it's like gotta be with the community. And since the community is constantly evolving, we have to evolve too. So even though we're in our 5th year, it almost feels like we're still in our infancy because we're constantly evolving, which I guess is a good thing, but it's also confusing.
So, is the Glass Farm neighborhood, like how transient is that population? Because I can see how that can make your work incredibly hard.
It's like, I think it's, Habitat would know this, but I think it's 48% homeownership, which is a lot higher than we would have thought.
Yeah.
But a lot of the population that some of our artists work with are youth. And unfortunately, a lot of the youth, it's transient.
Okay.
So we have a lot of renters, and it's difficult.
Yeah, and again, what I love about hearing that those early days is, I mean, so much of what matters in these sort of relationships and some, you know, different organizations I've talked to is consistency, right? And like you said,
showing up.
People come in with ideas to different projects all the time, but the actual follow through and the consistency. Like that's what matters. And so, getting that building and putting a stake in the ground, is showing you're going to be here. And it puts you there. So you kind of talked about sort of the early experiences and how it kind of changed the direction of the organization, even just being a project to being kind of an organization. I guess how did that process shape you personally, from being a 22-year-old coming into a neighborhood association saying, hey, we want to do this. And kind of being shut down and then going back to the drawing board and actually kind of re-engaging that in a new way.
There's a few lessons kind of learned. I think one is one that I've already touched on, which was I personally think I learned to listen. Like I'm a pretty impatient person, and I have the ability to have empathy towards others. Therefore, I feel like I know how they're feeling or what's going on with them. And I think I react versus just listening and then trying to understand the state of where people are and kind of meet them where they are instead of trying to fix things. So I think, you know, in that term, to just, I learned to react in terms of resource-based needs on a real community need basis versus not just the needs that I thought was needed. Mm-hmm. And I'd argue like that was the hardest lesson learned, and I wish that more of Chattanooga could learn that too. Mm-hmm. Because we care deeply as a city, but the intention behind a lot of our motives and projects that we go after isn't actually rooted in the real needs of who that project is benefiting. Yeah. And so I think now I'm aware of that, and I'm hesitant to get involved in new things because if I don't have the time to go on a listening tour and truly create relationships, then I don't feel like what I'm giving is actually creating a difference. So there's that. And then also, I think that goes back to just, you know, caring deeply about others, and that what ended up happening was, quote unquote, my work, but just became my life because this work is so consuming. And it was hard for me to, like, you know, you spend time with a 14-year-old that you're trying to get into youth programming and you want to work with, and then you find out that somebody shot him the next day and he's like really high up in a gang and he's 14. And you just spent 2 weeks working with him at an art bike camp and, you know, trying to find funding to send him to Atlanta for a maker fair. And, you know, his life is now on the line. And I think it's like the relationship, people-based, of like, I think so many people think Glasshouse is just about sidewalks and streetlights, and we're infrastructure-based, but we, like, those things don't happen just because we think they need to happen. The residents have told us that those are their priorities, but we only know the residents' priorities by understanding where they are and where they've come from, which is relationships. It's porch swinging on their porch. It's going for walks with them. And if we don't get close and create those relationships, then it becomes it's not authentic, right? And so I think it's hard. The lesson I learned is like, you're trying to balance like the doer, like, okay, we have to get stuff done, and then like getting totally consumed in these folks' lives, because there's so much struggle. Mm-hmm. Education, job, injustices, I mean, everything stacked against them. Glasshouse is here to do XYZ. We can't do everything. But sometimes it's like this neighborhood is so under-resourced that we get pulled in all these different directions, and we aren't actually able to live out our mission because we're trying to get the right resources to the table. And there's like a huge juggling act there. Yeah. That
well, we so going through that with. For 5 years, yeah. Like, how has that shaped you? How are you different in 2017 than you were in 2012? Because going through that experience.
I mean, I'm a completely different person. I mean, this has been, I don't know how to answer that. Nobody's ever asked me that, but it's definitely shaped, you know, I get up every day not for a paycheck. I care about this work, and I think I care about communities so deeply. I get so passionate. I'll sit in meetings and I'm so defensive. I get angry, Matt, when people don't get it. And I think I'm just such in an emotional state with this work that, you know, it's probably maybe to the point after 5 years where it could be not healthy. But I think it's because I'm so passionate about the work that the staff is also passionate about the work, and our partners are passionate about the work. And I think passion drives progress, right? And so everybody being on board with this and wanting to see change in a really intentional way is all consuming and exhausting, and it can wear you out, but it's the right way to go about it.
Okay, so well, thinking about the past 5 years, you know, what project or aspect of Glasshouse Collective are you most proud of over that time?
So there's a few, I think Glasshouse looks at things in two different ways or lenses. So we have our temporary projects, which activates the community and the residents, and then we kind of have more of our permanent projects, or ongoing, for better, lack of a better word, whatever. And so temporary projects, my favorite was Better Block. It's a national model that takes a corridor and enlivens it with kind of shares, because we're so close to the work, we have a vision with the community about what Glass Street could be, but not everybody else feels that. And so it's a 24 or 48 hour block party where you literally like bring trees to the street, you have pop-up shops, you plant flowers everywhere, and you let others envision what you're envisioning. And the beautiful part of that event was that so many of our residents led projects. And maybe they didn't come out like we had hoped or whatever, but it was truly resident-led.
Yeah.
And they were so stinking proud. Yes. When everybody else came out. And that's what the work's about. So I think that was one of my favorite. And also on that day was this Rise Up sculpture, where we hired an artist to come borrow ladders from the larger Chattanooga area, but also from the community. And there are people who didn't have ladders in the neighborhood, and they gave him a chair because he would ask, how do you get higher? How do you reach up? And so kids would be like, I get my kitchen chair. And so he would take the chair, or like a little step stool, and he would zip tie all of these things into this massive sculpture. There was 440 ladders. And I think people like the Hunter Museum and the aquarium, these, you know, leaders of these organizations came to Glass Street, I think, for the first time to drop off their ladder. And so that was also like, how do you bring the entire, like this conversation now, right? Is like, how do you get the entire Chattanooga area interested in this work? Because that's important, because we can't do it alone. But then how do we mend the two of the community as well? And so that was a beautiful project. It was temporary. It was only up for 2 months.
Okay.
But then afterwards, we have a community park. So it was kind of like a
look
what this space could be. And then...
Is that there, right there on the corner of Chamberlain and Glass? Is that that?
Mm-hmm.
That
well,
pocket
it's...
park?
Autry and Glass.
Autry, okay.
It was next to the old glass house.
Yeah.
And then an ongoing favorite.
Well, I mean, those temporary parts. Was that the time you guys had the Wayne White Parade?
No, that was another time.
Okay. Yeah, so those temporary projects, I think, are so important because, you know, I think for most residents, you know, and we're going to talk about this a little bit at the end too, but you really need a... I can tell people they need to go check out Glass Street. They almost need a reason to come,
right?
And I think that's exactly what you guys have done so well on a, you know, annual basis, and even more than that is kind of give people a reason to come and see that community with these temporary projects.
Yeah, that's, and you know, sometimes it's like you put so much work into something and it's only up for a weekend. But you're exactly right. It's the reason to get people excited. And then we always tell our neighbors that it's your weekend to celebrate. You don't work. You have fun. We'll get other volunteers from other places in the city to help run this thing. And this is your celebration because this is your community. And let's let the larger Chattanooga community come and see what you guys are all about. So temporary projects are a, you know, big one for us. But then also just recently, Habitat for Humanity, they have a program called the Neighborhood Revitalization Program, where instead of building new homes, they go into homeowners' homes and they fix up their homes based on needs again. So that could be an HVAC unit, that could be a roof, like unsexy stuff. And they came over about a year ago, said, all right, we're going to focus in the Glass Farm community in partnership with Glass House. And they've already worked on, I think, 13 homes. Those homeowners are proud, and they show up to the neighborhood meetings, and now they want to know like how they can kind of give back. It's not... We don't ask them to, but they have that sense of pride, right? And so I think for Glass House, because we can only do so much, and we started very much on focusing on the corridor, but we realized after listening to the residents that home ownership and home is important to the community. But Glass House, we can't do everything, and we can't be everything to everyone. And so finding that partnership with Habitat and recruiting them over has been so incredible. They are doing such an incredible job. And the best part about their NR, Neighborhood Revitalization, their NR program, is that they believe in holistic community development too. So they're not coming out to fix a house and think that it's one and done and we're going to have a better neighborhood. They know it's going to, it takes way more than that. So we're kind of in it together. Yeah. And we're just kind of bringing the creative approach and they're bringing the kind of revitalization approach. And it's an excellent partnership. I think that as of recently has been my favorite quote unquote project.
Well, okay. Yeah. So, you know, talking about your ongoing projects, I think that takes me to, you know, my next thing, like what is Glasshouse Collective's focus today? Like in 2017, you know, I know that the Habitat partnership has been huge for you guys. What else are you guys focused on right now?
So that's right. Partnerships, activation, and investment. So forming sustainable partnerships, like I was talking about with the Habitats in our program. Recruiting creative enterprises to Glass Street is our focus for this year. And that's because a few years ago, we recruited 3 artist residencies to come in and take over a vacant storefront on Glass Street and do programming to bring feet to the street and also add value to the neighborhood. So we had Rebecca Mooku do African drums and dance, and the kids loved it. We had 7 do graffiti and spoken word with Genesis. Then we had Rondell Cryer, who basically opened a resource studio with welding and woodworking equipment. Rondell's still on the street, and so we proved that creativity can really bring life back to Glass Street. The second thing that we're trying to prove is that business can be viable. So that's why instead of saying we're going to do another artist residency program, that we really want to focus on creative enterprise, that enterprise aspect. Like, how does that work? And maybe it's a production studio for now, Matt, because we can't really rely on feet on the street for sales. But let's get a business on Glass Street and see what that looks like. So we're focused on that. We're going to release a request for proposal. We received a grant to do some rent abatement stuff. So that's coming in the next month or two. Yeah. And then we're really focused on bookending Glass Street. So earlier when I was talking about how we do some community planning and development, the planning aspect of our work is we've been focused on the North Chamberlain and Glass intersection. We have new sidewalks.
The pocket park.
We have street trees, we have pedestrian lights, we have bus shelters, all these things that the community talked about wanting to be their priority back in 2012. We're doing that whole process again, going on another listening tour for Dodson and Glass.
Yeah.
And the idea is to bookend Glass Street. And we don't know what's going to happen in between, but that's not really our worry right now. Right. It's just let's bookend and anchor it.
Yeah.
So we're working with Boy Station Neighborhood Association, which is a neighborhood association by Dodson Avenue, and working with them on what that intersection could and should be. And then with our local transportation department, Blythe Bailey and his team on implementing those sidewalks and street trees and whatever the community's priorities are now.
Yeah.
So that's our other focus. And at that intersection, we're going to have a big block party October 8th to kind of unveil that.
Okay.
So the block party is not going to be where it typically is, North Chamberlain and Glass. It's going to be at Dodson and Glass. And, you know, we're constantly activating and empowering youth to take ownership and lead with the arts through Rondell. But Rondell's really his own entity. I think a lot of people think he's caught up in Glasshouse, but
yeah.
He's his own thing, and he's teaching kids how to do things, and he's getting commissions. Like the Tomorrow Building hired him to weld the numbers for all their units, and he worked with youth in the community, taught them how to weld, and installed them with them. So
that's awesome. So they actually came, did they come down here for that too?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, workforce development at its finest. And then I think the last thing that we're really trying to figure out is balancing the act of no real estate control.
What does that mean?
So a lot of community development projects, you acquire the community and then you develop it.
Okay.
Main Street, Fraser. So it becomes easier once you have control because you're the property owner.
Right.
So you can put what it is that you want in that or what tenant or sell that building to what whoever you'd like. Glasshouse is doing this with no ownership with any of the buildings.
Wow.
So I think there's folks that come in and ask Glasshouse, how do you do this without control? We want to know. We think that it's so grassroots and we think it's really cool that you're just kind of allowing the community to figure out what the community wants. And then we also get feedback like, this is dumb. You are putting in so much work into this. If you don't figure out some control, you could lose this neighborhood tomorrow. Some big shot could come in and buy up all of Glass Street and turn it into Main Street times 10.
Right. Yeah.
And so we're just in this constant like back and forth of like, what is our role in this? What does this look like? I mean, we've researched a lot of other entities, and they've done long-term leases on some of the buildings so that they can sublease to folks that are like-minded.
Right.
But at the end of the day, like, who has the ownership? And it's their say. And so Glasshouse never were intended to come in and own buildings and make money. But at this point, I mean, we're in our fifth year, right? Like, we're based on grants. Like, are we going to be able to keep going? And if so, should we buy a building and rent it out so that we can make some money and have earned revenue? Or do we still operate on this grant space? And so we're just like really in this kind of open space. And if any of these listeners have ideas of where we can go, I mean, I think.
So this is a truly up in the air question for you guys right now.
That's right.
Wow.
And Glasshouse is very much like, because I don't know if we mentioned this. This is funny that we haven't, I don't know if we've talked about this, but Glasshouse Collective, the aspect of collective in our name, Matt, is a true collective. Like, we don't do anything alone. We have so many incredible partners. And Glasshouse is really looking for that commercial partner.
Yeah.
But there's not one. Mm. And it's frustrating. I mean, we have a River City, but they're focused on downtown. And they do that. They're kind of that engine for downtown. We don't really have a neighborhood entity that would partner and work with us, buy buildings, work with us for the tenants, create some kind of subsidy so that we can continue to make it affordable. So right now we're in this place of like praying for a hero developer, but we're not quite sure if that's sustainable. So
yeah,
we're really exploring what this looks like. Not that we're going to be the developers, but we hope that the right partner comes to the table to be able to take on that work with us.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that really does push us into questions about the future. And, you know, something I'm very curious about, because you do sit into so many community meetings, you have so many conversations with the residents, you know, what's one challenge of that neighborhood, Glasshouse Farm neighborhood, that the residents really want to be able to overcome or see changed, you know, in the next few years?
I think that the community right now, and when I say community, I don't mean at large, I mean the neighborhood, is frustrated of, like, we have this convoluted grouping of residents, and no one's coming together, and there's not one voice. So we have a neighborhood association that's made up of folks that have been in the neighborhood and the community for a really long time, but are a little bit more resistant to change. And then we have this other group that is younger and excited and on fire for change. And then we have another group that are block leaders that are focused more on crime. And so this is all great problem to have, Matt, because that means people in this neighborhood are engaged and showing up to these meetings. Yeah. I mean, 5 years ago, that wasn't even a thing. And so now it's, how do we get all these folks to have one voice so that we can actually like stand up for ourselves and go after things that we need together versus in our separate silos.
Yeah, that is a great problem to have. And again, it gets into this thing where you only have that problem because of the sort of consistency. I mean, you've been there really 6 years now at this point, since you guys took that very first bus trip from downtown Enterprise South. And, you know, the lesson I feel like I've learned in watching you guys and what you guys have accomplished or even tried to accomplish over the past 5 years is that sort of when you're trying to bring improvement or change to anything, the most important thing is consistency. Because I'm sure it's only the fact that you keep showing up, that mm-hmm. consistency that eventually builds trust.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so, yeah, I just think that is the most important lesson I feel like I've learned from you guys when it comes to the question of how do we create community, how do we build community, you know, sort of regardless, it's consistency,
mm-hmm.
which will build that relationship and that trust.
Yeah, it's that kind of quote that's create with, not for.
Yeah.
And so you want to create a community with the residents and with people who live there, not just for them. And I think that goes back to exactly what you're saying, which is showing up, consistency, building relationships, and earning trust. And I'll be honest, we don't have the trust of everyone still, but everybody appreciates that we show up every day.
Yeah.
And just that appreciation helps have a more productive conversation than if we didn't show up or have a presence on Glass Street.
Yeah, it's that consistency, trust, which moves into dignity and pride.
Sure.
And you know,
just to encourage you guys, I have a feeling that that neighborhood has those things in maybe a way they didn't have 5 years ago because of the amount of time you guys have invested into that neighborhood. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, yeah.
Well, you know, as we're wrapping this up, as people, you know, are interested in learning more about what you guys are doing or get involved with Glasshouse Collective, how can they learn about that and reach out to you guys?
There's a few different ways. One is we have a community meeting the first Monday of every month at 6:30 at 2501 Glass Street. And that's a great way to meet some of the neighbors and hear what their priorities are and what we're working on. You can always visit us at 2501 Glass Street. You can follow us on Facebook, Glasshouse Collective, and Instagram at Glass Street Live. You can follow us on Instagram at Glasshouse Live. But we have a really fun upcoming event that we're hoping the entire city comes out to, and that is October 8th. It's actually a Sunday. From 4 to 7 or 4 to 8, it's a part of the Cyclovia City Celebration event that's citywide and really promoting bicycles and alternative transportation. And so it's starting on MLK and going through Highland Park and Avondale and Glenwood, and it's ending on Glass Street. We're going to have another parade and do a pop-up farmers market and some fun things that are really tied to what we're actually doing as an organization. We're going to launch some temporary things to see if it works. We'd love to see you guys out that day.
Yeah, and like I said, these temporary projects, these big one-day events, my family and I have been to quite a few of them now. And as we were saying, we really encourage you guys to get out and check out Glass Street and learn more about the Glass Farm neighborhood. And hopefully you won't have to wait until October 8th to make that happen. But we'd love to see you there on October 8th. So get that on your calendars. And Teal, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Well, thank you so much to Teal for coming in and sharing about the work of Glasshouse Collective. I know for me, one of the enduring lessons I've learned from them over the past 5 years and seeing the struggle and progress of their organization in the neighborhood is that in order to create enduring change, it takes commitment and trust and listening. And that isn't just true of neighborhood change, it's true of any sort of real accomplishment and progress. So hopefully you guys have been inspired by the work of Teal and the team at Glasshouse Collective to not only get involved, but to stick around. And if you want to learn more about the collective or their event, Glasshouse Live, coming up on October 8th, then check out their website at glasshousecollective.org or connect with them on Facebook at facebook.com/glasshousecollective. Well, you may have noticed that the audio quality of this episode was not as sharp as it normally is. Right now, I'm in the process of switching studios and will hopefully be working with Dynamo Studios at the Chattanooga Public Library in the near future. That said, I do want to thank Lamppost Group for the use of their studio over the past year. As their organization expands, they are in the process of reutilizing their studio space, and so that will no longer be available. They have been a great partner for us, and I'm not sure I would have been able to get this podcast off the ground without their generosity. As always, I'd like to encourage you guys to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from, and please take a moment to share this episode with a friend. And you can do that from our website at thecamphouse.com/podcast. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you have a great day.